are listening to The Motherhood Experience, a podcast where you are a part of the conversation with moms, for moms, and by moms. Let's jump into this episode with me, your host, Val Kleppen.
Welcome back to another edition of The Motherhood Experience podcast. I'm your host, Val Kleppen. So glad to have you joining me today. Today's guest is a friend of mine from my Minnesota days. Cheryl Perkins joins me on the podcast. You will hear about her homeschool motherhood journey, her bereaved motherhood journey, what family has meant and done for her as a mom, and everything else. We covered a lot in the too brief time we were able to sit and visit with one another. So without further ado, let's head into my episode right now with my guest and friend, Cheryl Perkins. I am so grateful to have my friend Cheryl here. Cheryl, from back in my Minnesota days, how are you, dear?
I'm doing pretty well.
I am so glad to hear that. So glad that you agreed to join me on the podcast. And I would love to have you start and share with the listeners the ages and stages of your children and motherhood right now.
All right. So I have 5 kids here on Earth. And the oldest is Casey. She's 23. And she just got married last summer. And she is now in school to be a chiropractor.
Nice.
Yeah. And then the next one is Dana. So I have 4 girls and then a boy. Dana is just turned 21 this week. She's also at school in Iowa. She's also at school separate in Iowa. She's studying environmental studies. And then Madeline is 18 and she's a senior this year in high school. So she's looking at colleges. And she works as a CNA and wants to become a nurse. So she knows her path. She just got to pick what school she's heading to next. Mm-hmm. I'm mostly done homeschooling her. She's taking all PSEO classes through the local university. So, and then Yannicka is 16 and working at getting her driver's license, hopefully in the next couple weeks here. And then Noah is 14 and the tail under there. And That's it.
And he's your only boy.
He is indeed.
You mentioned homeschooling. Have you been homeschooling the whole time?
Yep. I started the thought of sending Casey away, you know, on a bus. Well, I didn't really entertain sending her to the local school. I thought about driving her to the Christian school in town or something. And the thought of, you know, 40 minutes there, 40 minutes back, 40 minutes there, 40 minutes back. And I thought, no, that's just, I couldn't bear to send her away. I liked her too much.
Yeah. She is a pretty cool gal.
Yeah. So, and you know, we had just met a lot of, I never thought I would homeschool. Never. I thought homeschoolers were nutballs. Like, no.
Same.
I was not going to be one of those crazy people. But we met a bunch of homeschoolers who had really nice kids. And you know, I got the Lord moved and turned me around. So
isn't that funny? Yep. If you just want to do something, tell the Lord that you'll never do it.
Oh yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
I swore I would never live in North Dakota. I'm sure you've heard me say this before. I swore I would never live in North Dakota, and we lived there for, I don't know, 12, 13 years. I swore I would never live in Minnesota. We lived in Minnesota before we moved here to South Dakota. I swore I would never homeschool. This is our 7th year homeschooling. So now I'm swearing I'll never be a millionaire.
Oh, well, good. That's a good way to go.
We're going to see how far I can take this trend now. So you've been homeschooling for a while, and also your family is not nut jobs. I can confirm. Yeah. Crisis averted there. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed with 4 girls and a boy the different academic interests? First of all, when you named off like Casey's chiropractic, you know, Dana's environmental studies, I think you said. Madeline's wants to be a nurse.
Yeah.
I mean, these aren't, you know, low end jobs or careers by any means. So did they have different academic interests and pursuits in their homeschool?
It was so funny because when my kids were all five of them in school, I would have said, I'm doing something wrong because none of them like school. I was envisioning this like homeschool environment where my kids just love to learn. And really my kids wanted to get school over with and get, you know, away from it all. They didn't want to do school. They didn't love it. Nothing. Not even as much like when I was in school, I went to a Christian school, but I loved math. Like I really loved it. No, nothing. There was no subject that any of them would say they loved. And I was like, oh man, what am I doing wrong? And then Casey graduated and went off. I mean, she did a year of kind of a gap year program at a camp. Loved that. Then went out to my husband's brother's organic farm out in Indiana. Worked there for off and on for like a year and a bit. This was kind of through COVID, so it got a bit weird in there. But
sure.
And I thought, none of my kids are ever going to go to school or go to college. Like, that's okay. But none of them are able to go. And then, whoa, it all of a sudden happened. I wouldn't say that the younger ones still love schooling or anything, or that they love schooling, but the oldest two genuinely like school.
Mm.
They see, I went to a school all the time. When I got to college, I had this, like, I think I just had this mentality of you just got to jump through the hoops and get through it. Like, did I really process the fact that I was paying to learn something? I don't know, like, you know, like my second daughter, she has professors who just know to wait. After class, they just wait because Dana's going to come up and ask me a question. Like, that's just how it is. Like they just love sitting and being lectured to. They really, I mean, not everything. Of course, there's some boring classes. But in general, they really, really like it. They like learning and they like school, you know. And I'm like, what in the world? So whatever I did here, it worked out there. So
I love that. And you also live out in the country. So let's kind of maybe see how far we can take this then. Do any of them have like interest in rural life continuing for them, or are they kind of more city folk now?
You know, it'll be interesting to see. Casey loves the outdoors. Dana, environmental studies. She loves being, you know, she loves gardening. She loves, yeah, all that kind of stuff. My kids all like being, they like hiking. They like being out of the city. I think that, you know, right now Casey's living in the cities because she's going to school. I think there's things she likes about that, but a lot of her pursuits when she's away from school are sort of nature oriented. And so I think I could very much envision them living sort of like we do out rural someday.
Yeah. So you and I met, I don't even remember how many years ago, but it was kind of by happenstance that we ended up at the, so it was a mom's group.
Yep.
And we ended up at the same table. And I ended up at that table because it was the table that was like the furthest on the edge, even though there was no edge.
Yeah.
Really. And also it ended up being like right up front in front of the podium, which I don't think I realized when I sat down.
Right.
But Tammy, who was coordinating everything mm-hmm. at the time, came up to me. She had invited me to the mom's group. We were new to that little community, I guess. It was when we moved to Minnesota after I swore I would never.
Yeah.
And
never lived there.
Tammy invited me to this mom's group and I sat down at your table. And Emily also was at your table. I can't remember if there was anyone else, but I remember Tammy came up to me later and said, it's no coincidence that you sat down at that table because you sat down at the homeschool mom table. I was like, oh, I did? Like Cheryl homeschool? I remember that you had made me laugh so hard a couple of times during that meeting. And I was like, oh, she was so funny and she homeschools. That's so cool. I was so excited.
See, I remember that you made me laugh. I guess we just made each other laugh. I don't remember.
But then that's how we met. And I think mm-hmm. it was through the mom's group that we continued to meet up now and then. And then eventually we became a part of the Bible study at Barb's. Barnesville Barb's Bible study, babes.
Yeah, that's right.
All the bees. Well, not exactly. All of them. Yeah, it's been many, many years that you mm-hmm. and I have known each other, and we shared lots of stories, I think, about our homeschool journey, in particular mothering journey. We are both bereaved moms, and I'll let you talk about that in a minute. One thing that I want to ask you before we get to that is, I think, I can't remember, is it allergies, something that your kids deal with kind of routinely across the board? Is it allergies?
I think maybe a few years ago we were diving into like dietary stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Because they were having stomach aches and different things. A lot of that stuff got resolved because we took stuff out of the diet, but yeah.
Okay, so that's what I was going to ask about is when you have like these little nagging but chronic issues, how did you navigate trying to take care of your kid or kids, because it was more than one, and the rest of life too? And did you end up changing things for yourself in that as well, because you ended up changing them for your kids?
Yes. So it actually started off with Dana and I. Dana got rid of a bunch of things in her diet because she was just struggling with all kinds of stuff, stomach aches, and then a lot of anxiety and different things too. Mm. And there's a history of thyroid issues in my family. And she, around that time, was diagnosed with Hashimoto's. So like, you know, hypothyroidism.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we started making dietary changes for her, which were super helpful with stomach ache and lots of other things. And so then the rest of us sort of got all tested, and kind of within a 6-month period, most of my kids went gluten, dairy, eggs, soy, a bunch of things free. And so in a way it was easier because we were all eating like that. But it was a lot of work. It was time consuming to do that, like really time consuming. I had a bit of an idea how to be gluten-free. There's a number of celiacs in my family, so it wasn't like that was a foreign thing to me. And since then, Dana and I, the ones with the Hashimoto's, are still gluten-free. But the rest of them have all gotten much healthier and gotten everything back. My kids still, if they eat too much dairy, have skin issues, but that's a choice they make themselves, whether they want to, you know, do that or not.
suffer the consequences or not. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like with me and Taco Bell. I just love it so much, but it's a good thing the nearest one is like 3 hours away.
Oh yeah. That's a little tough to get to.
So have you found though also that gluten-free foods have gotten a lot better over the years than they used to be?
Yes, they have. And the other thing, you know, actually most of the time we don't eat a lot of gluten-free products. We just ditch like the gluten-free. Like we eat sandwiches without bread, you know, like we eat roll-ups or something like that. You know, and I do have some flour that I buy from Italy that she and I can handle well. And so I can make a cake with regular flour, you know, it's regular type flour. So we do have a little bit of a cheat there that we could do. So, and I make sourdough now, and that's easier on us with that same flour and stuff. So I don't use a ton of gluten-free, like on the shelf gluten-free products anymore, but you're right. When I do, they've gotten a ton better than they used to be. Cause it used to be like cardboard.
Yeah.
You could have eaten the box just about.
Yes. And the box probably would have tasted better in a lot of cases. Is it einkorn flour by chance?
No, it's not. It's just a regular wheat flour, but it is grown in Italy and they just use different wheat there. So, and then I also have some whole wheat that I've gotten from a local place. That's just an older variety that they grow. And then we were just able to have it tested and see if we can handle it or not. And I, you know, I can handle that. So I can eat that too, but I just don't, I cut out a lot of that stuff in my diet. Cause it just, you know, it's not always the best. Yeah. I love bread and I love stuff like that, but it's not really the best thing for me at this stage of life. You know, my metabolism doesn't handle all that stuff as well as it used to.
I know. And that's kind of a grieving process as you get older. I feel like as your metabolism changes, you're like, I really want that back.
Yeah. I know. It is sad. But there are other good things with the aging process that I wouldn't trade. So.
Yeah. And thankfully also it was the issues that you were finding could be resolved with diet, and it wasn't, you know, I don't know, more complicated than that, right. I guess. But it's still unsettling when you don't know what it is or what's causing it.
Yeah. Yep. And you feel like you're just taking a shot in the dark and who knows?
Right. Right. So it was after we started, I think, the Bible study, someone told me that you and I had another thing in common, and that was that we were both bereaved parents. And so I would love for you to share your experience with your daughter and how we share that thread as well.
Yeah. So Elena was our youngest, and she was born in 2012. And when she was 3 months old, I went to get her from her nap, and she had passed away. And yeah, that started our family on a really rocky ride. It wasn't fun. My husband suffered some serious depression, not right away, but like in many years following. Between that and with her death, a lot of my kids went through major anxiety. We did eating disorder. We did all kinds of things that were really, really hard. But God works through those things in amazing ways. And I've learned a lot about suffering and how He uses it in our lives. And I remind myself that, you know, Cheryl, you always prayed that your kids would follow hard after Jesus and not that they would have a happy, easy life. And so far, you know, I don't know what the future holds, but so far that prayer has been answered in a yes, like, you know. And so now I pray, Lord, help my children to suffer just enough that they never leave your side. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think knowing what your family went through and has gone through since really solidifies the importance of family as well, because it was something all of you experienced it as a loss. It's different from a pregnancy loss because everyone knew her and loved her for the 3 months that she was with you. And so I think that probably would be a big difference from like Harlan being stillborn and Haley not knowing her at all, but having your kids go through that and probably that being their first encounter or experience with death. Would that be a correct assumption?
Yeah. And I mean, I remember thinking at the time, it's going to be different. Like if you lost a 12-year-old, it would be so much different than losing Elliot 3 months, just because there's so much more in your life. There's so much more part of your habit and pattern and everything, never mind how much you love them, of course. That being said, you know, there's other things about, like for a mom, I've often thought the loss of like for you, I just imagine it would be even more lonely because I think you're experiencing it a different way than the rest of your family. And as a mom, I think I experienced that also. But they still did experience more, you know, than right. what maybe your kids got to experience. Right. So, yeah, I don't know. It's different. Everybody processes it differently and it stinks.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, even 12 years later for you, this year will be 12 years. Mm-hmm. She was your sixth child. Had you kind of settled on six or was it still like just maybe however many, and then losing her was like, nope, no more. What was that? The size of your family.
I always wanted six kids. I just, really? Six. Yeah. Six was my favorite number. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but like, I grew up in a family of four and I remember thinking, you know, two more would have been like, that just seems like an awesome number. My husband, when we got married, said, let's have 12. I said, then, you know, I don't know that I could do that there. So he was always open to just as many as we would have, you know, but sure. we talked about that, you know, six would be just an awesome number of kids. And yeah, after she died, I thought my fear is going to be so big. I don't know how I could do this. Like, I think I would be, and I know the Lord would have and I would have loved that kid and it wouldn't have mattered, but I just, and I mean, I think with my age and everything, it was a normal time. It's not like it's abnormal or anything. So, you know, I think by the time we would have been ready to have another kid, I was already, you know, with her, they were already talking about my advanced maternal age, you know? So,
which is so flattering that they changed it to that. It used to be a geriatric pregnancy, is what they used to call it. Yeah, but now it's just advanced maternal age. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I do wonder then, have either of your older kids talked about starting a family? Do they have fears about that also?
You know, we haven't talked about it much. You know what? I imagine some of that stuff might come up when it happens.
Right.
But right. For right now, they're not in a stage where they're talking about that at all. Casey just got married, but she's got 3.5 years of chiropractic college to go through. So I know they're not planning on having a kid anytime soon. Dana is dating someone pretty seriously, but again, she doesn't even talk about marriage, never mind having kids. So in general, all of my kids are very pro family and pro kid. Yeah. And like, I've never heard from any of them, I'm never having kids, or like, you know, I don't want to have a, you know, I've never heard that from any of them. So right. I would assume that, you know, but I do imagine that anxieties and things might come up. Things that, cause that's one of the things I wasn't prepared for, I think, is how, like with grief and, how many things are, I don't know if subconscious is the right word, but like that you don't even realize consciously, like, for example, she died in November, right? Like 2 days before Thanksgiving. So when the light gets like it does at that time of year, and I found her around supper time, and I walk down the hall and things are similar, like panic wells, you know, and I had to work really hard for a lot of years to, and at first, like our whole family, we get very blue around that time. Mm-hmm. And for little ones, they wouldn't even know. I mean, Noah was only 2, you know, but that kind of stuff or associations, like a certain movie that they put on the night when we went to the hospital and they put on to distract the kids, my kids have a real aversion, you know, and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, just things that it's not some of those things aren't even conscious. Like you're like, oh yeah, I don't like that. It's like that comes and it just kind of overwhelms you and you don't even realize. So I wonder how much of something like that, it might happen to them when they go through an experience and they're not even ready for it. And it just kind of, ends up happening. But my kids have had to plow through a lot of stuff. We've done therapy, we've done lots of different things. They're pretty proactive with mental health, a lot of them. And most of them, you know, and so I think that they have those tools, you know, to realize that if they need help, they're going to go get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, coming back to the whole unit of a family, the fact that you all endured that together, I think was so critical and will continue to be so as your kids age and face, you know, who knows what, but whatever the circumstance is, they will just draw on the fact that they can go through hard things, but especially when their family is there to support them. So having 5 kids, do they all, let's say more or less, have a good relationship with one another? Would you consider them close?
Yes. Like, yes. I mean, if I compare it to what my family was, and I love my sister and my brothers, but growing up, you know, when you're at school and you have friends your age all the time, and that's who you hang out with all the time. Like my sister and I didn't really get close until she got married. And now we are very close, but like we really didn't have much of a relationship. And one of the things that I would say is my top highlight of homeschooling my kids is I thought I was going to make these, you know, geniuses because I was going to do so much better than the public school could and whatever. And I realized after a while that it was like, yeah, no, that wasn't going to happen. You know, what really the huge benefit of homeschooling was like character development and their relationship with each other. And the fact that I always made them room in pairs, and until they got, you know, at least 15, 16 kind of thing. And they had to learn to work with each other. They had to learn to work through problems. You know, when you homeschool a kid and you're both crying about math and whatever, I mean, you got to come back to it. You got to work it out. That's like the biggest thing. I was telling people the hardest thing about homeschooling is your temper, and it's your like learning to just come back, apologize, start again. You know, you can't just, like with my siblings, we could go off to school all day. We just had to endure each other for a few hours in the evening, and then we were off again. You know, we didn't have to make it work. We didn't have to learn to work it out. And when Casey came home, like she'd already graduated from high school, and you'll discover this if it's not happening, or like kids at that age are meant to go, you know, they're meant to go out into the world. They're not meant to live under mom and dad's roof anymore. But she and I had to work through stuff because it was COVID and she had to be here. And I mean, I love her, but we just, there were struggles and there were things we had to work through. But I think our relationship is so much better because of that. And she was also very intentional with all of her siblings about working through anything so that they had a good relationship. So yeah, there are some that naturally sort of gel together better than others, but they all, yeah, they do have a really good relationship, which is really awesome.
Yes. And I love hearing that, especially from larger families, because I think some people with not as many children tend to get overwhelmed because of, like, I have two kids in my home and fighting is, you know, it's not just a daily thing. It's like minute to minute kind of thing. I have no doubt that Haley and Heston will be incredibly close as they grow up. But also sometimes I often feel like, especially what if Harlan were still here? What would the dynamic be among the three of them, you know? And, you know, if we had more, if I'd had 7, 8 kids,
right,
you know, what would that, would they all be close, or would it just be like these two fighting and nagging? Would that be magnified 7 times?
Who knows,
so I love hearing stories where it's like, yeah, we have 5 kids, and sure there are moments, but they're really intentional about their relationships with one another. I just think that that's so encouraging. Can you tell me about how you picked the names for your kids?
Yeah. So Casey is the name of my dad.
Oh, and see, I didn't even know that. Yeah, I don't know any of this, actually.
Her name is Casey Molina, and so Casey is my dad, and Molina is a Dutch family name from my mom's side of the family. And then Dana, she's Dana Johanna, that's my father-in-law, is Dana.
Oh.
So we named the first two after their grandpas. We spelled Dana's name differently. We spelled it D-A-Y instead of D-A-Y-N-A instead of just D-A-N-A, because they were both a Perkins. And that way, Dana Perkins would look different on paper, at least.
Right, right.
So, yeah. And then her second name is Johanna, which is my mom's name and my grandma's name. And then Madeline. I always loved that name. And my husband, whose name is Matthew, but his friends, and we called him Maddie when he was in college, like that was sort of nicknamey. And so I always wanted to call her Maddie, which was good because that ended us calling him Maddie, which, you know, he needed to graduate from that since he's a male. So she is Madeline or Maddie, whichever. I think she introduces herself now as Madeline. Yeah. And Joan, which is my mother-in-law's name. It's her second name. And then Janneke. So both my parents were born in the Netherlands. And they came when they were very, to Canada when they were very young. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to give my daughter a Dutch name? Not realizing for the poor kid that nobody would know how to pronounce it. but the things we do to our kids, you know. Janneke Ruth, which is, so that was a Dutch name that we found that we liked. And then Ruth is my husband's grandma. And then Noah. When Noah was born, we did not have a name picked for him yet. We had a couple different Bible names, boy Bible names. And then when he was born, he was 11 pounds, 4 ounces. And I said,
what?
He's as big as an ark. We should call him Noah. So we did.
He was 11 pounds.
He was. He was large.
Good work, Cheryl.
All my girls were 9 pounds something, or Ellie was 10 pounds, but like he took the cake there, buddy. Oof. Yeah, he was 11 pounds, 4 ounces. I was so miserable at the end of that pregnancy. One day my husband came to me and he said, I remember thinking, oh, I've been a real bear. I should. And he came to me at the end of the day and was like, thanks for being nice to me today. Not sarcastic. Like, I was like, oh, for shame. Oh, but I was just so uncomfortable and so miserable. I think, you know, when you're physically so uncomfortable, I just had no patience for anybody, I guess. Oh, so bad. Poor guy. Yeah. So anyway, Noah Lawson, Lawson is another grandparent name from Matt's side. And then Elena Louise. Louise is another grandparent name. And then Elena. I was watching Sense and Sensibility.
Okay.
And her name is Eleanor, but they pronounce it Elena. That's how British people say it. And I was like, I love that. I don't want to name her Eleanor, though. So I just looked up online and I was like, oh. I could spell it differently. So I spelled it Elena and I just liked it.
Oh my goodness. I had no idea about any of this. And I also love the family names for all of them.
Yeah. They all got at least one. Some of them two.
I love that. Oh. I had no idea. So Casey babysat.
Yeah.
My kids a couple of times. And now my oldest is babysitting other kids. And it's just... crazy to think about how quickly I think it surprises you. One thing when my kids were little that really grated me was when people would say something along the lines of appreciate it while you can because time goes so fast. And I'm like,
oh yeah,
I'm on my 12th poopy diaper change.
I know.
Like, this is not going fast. And now my daughter's having a birthday. She's going to be 14. And I'm like, where did it go? It really did go so fast. They weren't wrong, but it just wasn't the right time for me to hear.
No. And I do remember getting to a point when some of my older kids, they're still all home, but they were done playing. You know what I mean? Like, they weren't playing with toys anymore and whatever. And I remember like my husband getting mad about toys being left around. And I said to him, you know what? It doesn't bother me anymore because every time I step on something, I think in a few years, I'm going to be so sad that I'm not stepping on anything anymore. I'm going to be so sad. And so there was a real shift for me at that point. And because I could see it happening. Like, I could see all of a sudden my kids, like the older ones, were getting old way too fast. And, you know, I don't know if this has started for your daughter. I find around, maybe it's different for boys. We'll see. But like somewhere around the age of 15, 16, I mean, you know, kids have to go from a place where mom and dad are the world and they want to be with you forever to being able to move out. And it's not that long a span of time where that changes. Mm-hmm. There has to be, and I remember going through this myself, some sort of painful ripping away of I'm ready to leave this place. And that, I don't think it has to go the way the world thinks it has to go all the time, but I think it still ends up being a little bit painful. And so when our girls went through that stage, 15, 16, they often would withdraw because we homeschool, so they're around a lot. So their response to that is to like head off by themselves a lot more.
Right.
And, you know, they often will do that. And I can't remember why I'm talking about this now. What did we talk about right before this? Wow.
I just also spit my drink.
I'm like, I had such a great point. And I forgot where I was going.
We were talking about how I couldn't hear.
Yes. And why
the years fly by kind of thing.
Yeah. So, and anyway, they do. And then you go through this painful stage where it's like, do your kids like me? Do your kids like you anymore? Or they don't seem like they do all the time. And then there's the coming back again. But then at that point, they're ready to go. And you know, anyway, but it's just, yeah, you miss. When you're in that stage, you miss the like little 3-year-old who just thinks you're the best.
Yeah.
So.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, you don't even know this, and we didn't rehearse. I didn't prep you or anything. But when you were talking about homeschooling and building the relationship with your family, I did a whole episode on that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at the time of this recording, I think it published just a couple of weeks ago. It was one of my favorite episodes to record. By myself. Ooh. Without a guest.
Oh, yeah.
No, I forgot where I was going. It happens. You had touched on something else, though, about... Oh, I remember, because when you were talking about this and the different stages that your kids enter into and when they need... Do you find that... Do any of the kids you have kind of demonstrate or remind you of yourself when you were growing up or around their age?
Yes. Absolutely.
All of them or some of them or one of them?
No, different pieces of all of them, I would say. Not all of them. Different pieces of some of them. You know, like some of them in the way they interact in school. Let's say, like, now that there are some of them are actually in school, I'm like, oh, that's how I did that, kind of. Just different things like that. Yeah. The way they deal with issues, the way they deal with conflict, or I know there's not one that's a carbon copy of me. But there's pieces in them. And pieces of my husband too, which is
I was just gonna ask. So pieces of Matt too.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah, and it's interesting when you see the two things together and you think, how does that work in one kid? but it does happen. Yeah, and not just physically, you know. I mean, you can see that too, but of course the mentally and everything, and that's just kind of weird. And it's interesting to me, you know, to think, okay, do I get along better with the ones that are like me or the ones that are more like Matt? I mean, I married him. So, but
That is interesting. And it's not something that you want to put on your kids. You know what I mean? Like, I used to say for a brief period of time that one of my children resembled me in all of my favorite parts and the other resembled me in all of my least favorite parts.
That's rough.
And that was quite a season. But I think that shifts too.
It does.
You know, or maybe as they grow, maybe that was just me at that age or the favorite things about me at that age. I don't know. That sounds so self-centered. Not even what I was trying to go for.
No, but I mean,
you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. Because there are like personality traits that it's or things that at certain times, you know, there's good and bad to all. Right. And so at a certain time in their life, they may be immature. And so you're seeing the negative side of it. But give them a few years and some maturity and you're going to see the good part of that. So, you know, it may look all bad for a while, but it hopefully will turn around.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I did know that your parents, you said Netherlands?
Yeah. They came from the Netherlands.
I think I did know that, but I had forgotten. And I just assumed that you were always like just Canadian.
Nope. Well, I always was, but my parents, but they came when they were little, like, so a year and less than a year is when they came over, but.
Oh, wow. So okay. Well, that's so cool. And what is Matt's family history? Does he have?
Total mutt.
Well, he wears it well.
Yeah, I think there's like a tiny bit of Dutch in there. So my kids are technically 51% Dutch or something, but yeah.
Sure.
You know, English, Scottish, German. I don't, there's a whole parcel of stuff in there. Nothing that really stands out. So something in the like English, Scottish, something in there is the majority of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of like me.
Oh, yeah.
But my husband is basically half German, half Norwegian, or he might be a little more than half German. But he's German and Norwegian. Total Scandinavian.
Yeah.
And total, like, holidays on his side of the family, you know, Kugan and other foods that I'm forgetting that I'd never had or heard of before I married him, you know. And I was like, what? This is basically just bread and potatoes. I love this. That's all it is. Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Well, Cheryl, as we wrap up here, you and I met at a mom's group and became friends from that. It was, you know, one of the greatest hidden blessings of accepting Tammy's invitation to that. What would you say to other moms who maybe they're homeschool moms, maybe they're rural moms, maybe they're all of the above, who are just kind of trying to figure out, should I be a part of this? Should I not? What would you say for them, kind of getting involved in different things?
You know, for me, I think for a long time, I was hesitant to get involved with things because I always thought about it as, what do I have to offer? Or, I mean, is this going to be entertaining? Maybe that was part of it, but also like, this is hard to meet new people. Is there anything about me that they would even like, you know? And you never know when someone, God will put someone in your path, or when you will have a word for someone. And so it's important, especially when your kids are little, get out there. Even if you just socialize a little, I would say, go try. Try, you never know what'll happen. And you don't have to, it's not a lifetime commitment. But I would say, get out there and go, because you need to connect with other people. You sometimes feel like you're drowning, especially when you homeschool and your kids are little, or if your kids are little enough that they're just home. And you just, you need like other people to, you know, throw you a life raft. Nope, a life, what do you call them? Ring? What do you call those things? Life preserver.
There you go.
There you go. One of those. Yeah. And then you life can check one too.
Well, I really can't think of anything I would add to that. I feel like that was perfect sound advice. And I know will be a blessing to all who listen to this episode. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining me on the Motherhood Experience podcast.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the Motherhood Experience podcast. To join our exclusive TME community, head on over to themotherhoodexperience.com/learn more. Be sure to follow The Motherhood Experience on Facebook and Instagram, and please leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us a comment below, and we'll catch you next time.